coming to you live from Fred's apartment in downtown Raleigh, North Carolina. It's another episode of Album Swap.
Welcome to episode 14 of Album Swap. This is Brian McDonald with Fred Dees Jr.
Junior. Remember, branding is always important.
That's right. Fred Dees Jr. here with another two albums to swap, review, and discuss. Fred, the album I gave you was Public Enemy, Takes a Nation of Million to Hold Us Back. And this is an album that I listened to in college. I have to say it was just in my groundbreaking. I bought the first album, Yo Bum Rush the Show, which is brilliant in its own right, but what's kind of cool about this album is it's they're seasoned so much more, and they've like taken their game up to this higher level. To put it in terms of what you had back then, it was like Michael Jordan, with the Bulls. They were just, to me, they were the pinnacle of hardcore rap with like a message and a meaning and music and the whole thing kind of tied together.
Yeah, that's the thing, is it was more than just jams, right? It was more than just music. They were using it as like a vehicle for that message. And the second album, the one, The Nation of Millions, that is the one where they finally kind of came out. The first album, Yo Bum Rush the Show, was like their intro. And they, we'll obviously get into it, but they were already starting on the second one. Like, they already knew where they wanted to take it. And so after the intro, yeah, they took off. I can imagine listening to that in college, getting hyped. Were you a senior, junior, senior?
I think I was like a sophomore or junior. How I got into Public Enemy was one of the guys I went to school with, who was from Washington, D.C., would bring a lot of cool music sometimes you didn't hear at that time, because he would hear it on, like, say, one of the underground stations up in D.C.
Were you using words like cool?
Cool, hip.
So your buddy was bringing hip
radical
music. He was bringing hip music down from Maryland?
He was bringing cool music down from D.C. And so, yeah, he gave me the first album, Yo Bum Rush the Show, and then, like, when the second one came out, it was one of those things that, like, okay, let's see how good this is compared to the first album, and it was like, holy crap, it's awesome.
Were they, what were they, CDs, cassettes, vinyl?
Yeah, CD. Bring it over, I should have brought it over, I still got the original CD.
That's really interesting, because I know cassettes were probably more popular at that point, right?
It was right really at the time when
CDs were kind of up and
taking
coming.
Over.
Yeah. Cool, that's awesome. Well, yeah, so we'll dive into that in a little bit. The album that I swapped you, completely opposite ends of the spectrum. So this, we've mentioned this before, but we don't plan these out. We pick these independently from each other, and we just text each other and say, this is the one we want to swap. So there is no plan behind it, right? You chose a Public Enemy record. I chose a band called Balsam Range, and the album is called Paper Town. They are a bluegrass band from Western North Carolina.
Canton,
North Carolina, yeah. And so we're on the opposite end of the spectrum on this episode. It's fall, it's kind of getting a little chilly. Like, the leaves have turned and now most of them are falling. And I'm just, when we get to that, I listen to a ton of bluegrass. I love bluegrass. I got into it late. I have to give a lot of credit to my stepdad and mom on that. But they would take me to these bluegrass festivals in North Carolina, which every single weekend through a certain period on the calendar, there is, like, every single weekend has a bluegrass festival somewhere. Down some random dirt road sometimes, other times like a big city or town will have it, but I remember one in Snow Hill, North Carolina.
Oh, yeah.
We would go just about every single year, and you're sitting in the woods with maybe a couple hundred people, and the world-class bluegrass players are playing. That's the thing with that community, the bluegrass community, it's so personable. I mean, you can go shake hands with some of the greatest ones just at any show. Like, it's such a cool feeling, and I really got into it when I was in college, coming out of college, and right after, I just fell in love with it. Lived in Asheville and got more into bluegrass, so love bluegrass. And Balsam Range was one of the bands that, when I lived in Asheville, they would frequent there all the time, and so you could just catch them. And like I was saying, the personable, you felt like you kind of knew them, they were just like, they're just those guys. And then all of a sudden, 2013, they come out with Paper Town, and it won Record Album of the Year for bluegrass. Yeah, they have also won Bluegrass Entertainer of the Year, I think.
Yeah.
They've won all these major awards, and I've seen them on these tiny stages. I've seen them at the free stages at the IBMAs in Raleigh. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
This is a band I've seen for free for peanuts, and they're world class, and I love them. And this album, that was the other thing, trying to pick which album to choose, and this one is just top to bottom, they do such a good job of mixing like old classic bluegrass elements, yes, but at the same time with modern bluegrass elements, especially with like the way they sing, like their vocals.
Yeah, it's the harmonies.
Yeah, the harmonies is very modern. But they also don't do what some modern bluegrass bands are doing that can kind of get on my nerves, which is when you start adding like drums and stuff. Bluegrass, some genres of music have rules. Bluegrass, yeah. Bluegrass is one of them. Like, yes. If you add percussion, guess what? It's not bluegrass anymore. It's old timey. It's country. And it ain't bluegrass.
It's alternative.
Yeah, it's alternative
or
bluegrass, right?
Alt country.
All bluegrass. But it's just not. And so I think you have to respect that. It's a genre of music that's rooted in tradition, and just respect it. And so I think that Balsam Range does a great job of kind of progressing it, but at the same time sticking to what is at the root of the genre. And so this album, again, I think it's their best one, and it is. It's awesome. It's got a nugget in there that I know you're going to love.
A couple nuggets.
I know our listeners are going to love them too, so I'm excited to dig into that one.
All right, so those are the two albums we picked this week to swap. We're going to come back for a background where we're going to give a little bit of information around the band and the album, and we'll be right back for that.
You're listening to Album Swap, and we'll be right back.
Okay, and we're back with segment two, backgrounds, where we give you a little bit of background information on the bands and the albums that we are reviewing. I will start off with Balsam Range.
You love saying that.
I love saying
it. It sounds good. It feels good saying it. Balsam Range.
Balsam Range. So yeah. Balsam Range is a bluegrass band. They are five musicians. The name of the band comes from the Balsam Range of the mountains nearby, which is part of the Blue Ridge Mountains.
Yep. Beautiful area.
Beautiful area.
Yeah, Canton's gorgeous.
Yeah, so they're from a town called Canton. It's about 13 miles west of Asheville. It's named after Canton, Ohio, where the steel for the bridge over the Pigeon River comes from.
No kidding. That's cool.
Yeah. So Canton, Ohio, which, of course, is the home of the Pro Football Hall of Fame.
Yeah, football. Always finds its way in somehow.
That's right. But Canton's like an old paper mill town that, like a lot of other industrial manufacturing towns in the U.S., you know, kind of fell on hard times. Pretty interesting, though, that the paper company that was there and what they've kind of called, you know, Paper Town. There was a Champion International Paper Company that had a factory, and it was the largest employer in Canton. And they were going to close the plant in 97. And the employees actually got together and said, we're going to buy it. So they bought the plant under the name of the Blue Ridge Paper Company.
Oh, nice. Okay.
And they ran it for a period of years, and they eventually sold it off. But I think that story's great because it kind of embodies what they've done with this album and with their fan base, is that they've built a real community and they've gone back to their community to kind of pull out the songs and the emotions that have been around them their whole life and that resonate with their audience. As we'll get into a little bit, they've even done some things to kind of build their audience and build a community for their audience.
Oh, yeah.
Paper Town, released in 2013, recorded in North Carolina in Arden at Crossroads Studios, which really is a studio focusing on bluegrass, gospel, Americana genres. I think what's interesting about the members of this band is like a super group of bluegrass guys.
Yeah.
They've all played with fantastic other bluegrass talent.
Yeah, I saw a documentary where David Holt, who's a North Carolina music yes. historian and also incredible musician as well, but he did he does like a series of things, like our episode, but he did it on he did one on Balsam Range, and that was the term he used. He said, you guys are basically a supergroup of bluegrass. That's exactly what they are.
Yeah.
They were all very accomplished before they even got together.
So Buddy Milton, who plays fiddles and sings a lot of the lead, started playing fiddle in college. He also played bass. So he played with David Holt and Doc Watson. He was Male Vocalist of the Year at the Bluegrass Awards in 2014. And I think he does a great job kind of leading the band. He's joined by him on mandolin is Darren Nicholson. He's performed on the Grand Ole Opry stage. He's toured with the Crow Brothers. And again, he's been a winner along with the rest of the members of the IBMA. Tim Surrett on bass and dobro. He was with a gospel group called the Kingsman Quartet.
Oh, yeah.
And they won a lot of Gospel Musicians of the Year award there. He also performed with like Ralph Stanley, Brad Paisley, Tony Rice, Vince Gill. So again, just really seasoned.
Love Tony Rice. Tony Rice is a monster.
Monster.
Oh yeah.
Caleb Smith on guitar, also singing, was also in a gospel group called Harvest, and he did a lot of guitar playing, won several awards there. He's also a guitar builder, and he's also built like guitars for like Zac Brown.
Oh, very cool. Yeah. That's really neat. Probably it's a good area to be making guitars and stuff.
Yeah. And then rounding out the band is Dr. Mark Pruitt on banjo. He's a Grammy winning banjo picker.
And a doctor.
And a doctor. He played with Ricky Skaggs.
Nice.
So he's a bit older than the rest of the guys. He recorded his first record back in 1974.
So he's the vet.
Yeah, but he has an honorary doctorate from Western Carolina University for his contributions to bluegrass.
That's very neat.
Yeah.
That's another doctor in bluegrass.
There you go. So Paper Town, they put out in 2013 on Mountain Home Records. And again, it's named for the hometown of Canton and the paper mill. It won Album of the Year at the 2013 International Bluegrass Music Awards. And earlier when you were saying they were at the IBMA the past few years, I was like, I wish I would have known because I would love to have seen. I may have actually seen part of these guys because I went down each year and tried to just pick bands
out. Yeah, they played on the free stage, or one of the free stages, a couple years, if not every single year.
And they also got like six other nominations in 2013. And I think why is because like Paper Town is just a great mix of good songs from other writers in contemporary bluegrass, as well as some classic songs that we'll get into. And then it's kind of you know, a little bit of that gospel feel into it. And
it does have a good
soul.
Yeah, absolutely.
But it doesn't break away from the traditional bluegrass.
Yeah, they do a great job of kind of doing their own thing, putting their own spin on stuff, but still holding true to what bluegrass was built on.
So the other thing I thought that was interesting in looking at this was like the video of Paper Town actually shows their hometown of Canton, North Carolina, and some of their relatives.
Like the music video?
Yeah, oh, cool. And they're playing kind of up on a ridge overlooking the mill. They're looking through old newspapers.
Oh, nice.
Because the song tells a bit of a story, and we'll get into that a little bit later, but you know, kind of tells a historical story of the town in a lyrical way.
Nice.
It kind of has that feeling of blue-collar, down-home feel to it, and I think that resonates throughout this album. The other thing that just is interesting about this album, the production and editing and mixing are just really fantastic. It's clear,
clean,
balanced.
Yeah.
You can hear the vocal harmonies. So I really like that.
Yeah, very clean. It's a very comfortable feeling record to listen to. Man, you could listen to it all day.
So one of the things I mentioned earlier that I was going to talk about was that the band had joined with the fans to create this community, and it's called Balsam Nation.
Nice.
And so they've created like a website. You can buy their music there, as well as like they have photos and high resolution images, and you know, different things to kind of like for their fans to kind of share. There's some free music downloads as well, and you can also get tickets to their upcoming shows.
Nice. Yeah, I have to check that out. BalsamNation.com?
Yeah, Balsam Nation, I believe. So overall, you know, Paper Town was just a real big winner. Again, not on the pop and circuit by no means, but...
Yeah, it was actually a big winner. Yeah.
Well, I was going to say it had five consecutive months at the number one spot on the bluegrass charts.
Wow.
As well as winning the Album of the Year. Since then, they've gone on to release, I believe, two more albums,
mm-hmm.
which I haven't listened to yet because I was kind of digging through this so much. But I want to kind of check those out because I heard that the Mountain Voodoo, I believe the most recent one, is really good.
Really good, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that's not too old.
That came out, what, this year?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah,
yeah, really good, really good. Nice, that's awesome.
So that's Balsam Range, Paper Town.
Nice. Well, I will jump in now with Public Enemy. So the band Public Enemy, the album is called It Takes a Nation of Millions to Hold Us Back. Public Enemy, I mean, I obviously knew who they were. You know what I mean? Like, I know about Chuck D. I know about Flavor Flav.
How can you not know about Flavor?
Yeah,
Flav?
Right. But I didn't realize that I'm 32. There's still like a good section of kids younger than me that don't know who Public Enemy is.
Yeah.
And I didn't really take that into account. I played music with a guy who's what, like 24, 25, something like that.
Yeah.
And he didn't know who Public Enemy was. You know, so. So it was when I kind of heard that, it changed my perspective a little bit. And so, you know, kind of look at him a little bit different. It's kind of not a lost artist, but to think that, I mean, if a 25-year-old doesn't know who Public Enemy is, I guarantee you an 18-year-old
doesn't. They're forgotten.
18, yeah.
And I think partially because rap in this form like hip hop's gotten much more like R&B and all that, and so it's moved away from like,
I don't know about that. There's
I'm saying as far as like and sampling, like we've talked about in early episodes, have changed the way bands like this
I'll give you that
kind of
yeah.
put their music together.
Absolutely. There's still a place for Public Enemy, and this album still would play so well nowadays, but yeah, they've kind of, I feel like in a sense they've been forgotten a little bit by this next generation, and now it kind of takes on a different light. Public Enemy, for everybody who doesn't know, formed in 1986 on Long Island at Adelphi. I think Adelphi University is how that's pronounced.
Yeah.
Chuck D is the main lyricist. Dude is a straight machine when
He's
it comes.
A prophet.
God, he is. Like, I mean, he is. Yeah, he is a prophet. Like, his words are strong, aggressive, but true, man. And it's awesome to listen to, but he is the machine behind the band when it comes down to obviously the words, but really I feel like the attitude really comes from Chuck D. Like, everybody else is definitely in it, no doubt, but Chuck D is the heart.
He's totally leading their entire effort. He's the voice.
He's the
heart,
dude, man.
He's the mind.
But the band started out, Chuck D was working at a radio station, I think kind of part-time, and he was fending off kind of a potential attack by another MC. He had been working on a couple of tracks and doing songs every once in a while, and he was working with Flavor Flav. Flavor Flav was doing a couple of tracks with him, helping out as kind of, not a hype man, but a lot of what Flavor Flav was doing was adding that extra kind of hype to what Chuck D was doing. So Chuck D comes out with this tape to fend off this potential attack from a local MC, and in that tape, he mentioned that he was Public Enemy number one.
Yes.
So the group that he was playing with before Public Enemy wasn't called Public Enemy. It was something else, and it kind of fell by the wayside, I guess, after that tape came out. Because not long after the tape came out, the program director for the radio station got hired by Def Jam Records. And Rick Rubin was running Def Jam Records. That's another common theme with our podcast. This is like the third time Rick Rubin's come up, and not just for rap. It came up for Raging Slab.
That's right, Raging Slab.
One of the early episodes.
I'd probably say
our episodes.
Yeah, yeah, if you drew a line through like most of my CDs I bought at that time, it was either like Rick Rubin or Brendan O'Brien.
Yeah,
plays.
Rick Rubin. Yeah, I get it. So Rick Rubin gives the program director, the old program director, now new Def Jam employee. Rick Rubin says, "Your first job is go get me Chuck D. Go get me the guy that was on that tape." And so he goes, and I mean, obviously they, you know, right here, I got a record deal for you. Boom, I'm there. So Chuck D takes Flavor Flav with him, and he also adds a couple of people. Hank and Keith Shockley. Hank and Keith Shockley and Eric Vietnam Sadler. Yeah. These three guys became the production team. So they were doing all the producing, and they were also called the Bomb Squad,
which is
so freaking cool, dude. Yeah. That is awesome, man. And it also makes so much sense the more you listen to them, because not necessarily from a volume level, but every, like, their beats had that like kind of like kind of impulse feel, like bombs, yeah, almost like doom doom doom. Yeah. Like, it really is a perfect name for them. They also added Terminator X, who was the DJ running the turntables on the stage, did a lot of the scratching, which is a common thing you hear in just about every single track on this album, is that scratch. He was also known for the Terminator sound, the Transformer sound. I'm sorry, the Transformer sound was supposed to replicate one of the Transformers back in the old cartoons or something like that. So Terminator X, killer DJ, and he gets a lot of shout outs on the record. And then Professor Griff. Was the last one, and he was considered the Minister of Information, because
right,
he just got them all the info, because these guys were politically and socially charged with just about every single word they said. And Professor Griff was the Minister of Information. They made up kind of the S1W, Security of the First
Security
World.
Security of the First World.
Yeah, and so you'll hear S1W in a lot of their tracks.
And those guys stood on the side of the stage.
Yeah.
In military fatigues.
Yeah.
And did these like formations, like step formations.
The S1W.
That was awesome.
Right.
Yeah. And you can see it in on the earlier videos, not so much, but like by the third album, they became much more present.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah. So the first group of guys were Public Enemy. And then S1W were their security, basically.
Security of the First World.
And their punk wars. Yeah, punk guys. So that became Public Enemy. And so their first tour that they ever did under Def Jam was actually opening up for the Beastie Boys on their License to Ill tour. So that's really cool. On that tour, they were already working on the first album, which we've talked about. It's called Yo, Bum Rush the Show. It sold more than 300,000 albums. It wasn't like crazy successful. It was a little bit slower than Nation of Millions. And like we said, it was more of an introductory. Like once they got in, they got their foot in the door, Nation of Millions is what they wanted to make their name on. That's what they wanted to be known for. And so they had already, when they were out supporting the first album on those first couple of tours, they were already working on the second album. Like I think Chuck D said the day that Yo Bum Rush the Show dropped, they already had three songs for Nation of Millions recorded.
There you go.
Like they were already ready. After that comes the second album, which is the one that we will talk about today. It Takes a Nation of Millions to Hold Us Back. Came out in 1988. It is considered their best album and is also considered by many, many, many critics the greatest rap album of all time.
Yes.
Let that resonate.
It is. Well, I mean, definitely for the urban rap that was really, like, we talked about the Beastie Boys and all that. But part of the Beastie Boys was humor and kind of making fun of stuff. For like the serious rap, they were it.
Yeah,
nobody could touch them. I mean, Run DMC still is fantastic, but to me, Public Enemy was just like blew it all up.
Number one, Public Enemy number one.
That's right.
Yeah, considered one of the greatest albums, if not the greatest rap albums of all time. Rolling Stone, in 2003 came out with their 500 greatest albums of all time. This album was number 48. It was the highest rap album in the 500, and it was the only rap album in the top 100 of the 500.
Yeah.
Slant Magazine came out with their top albums in the 80s. This was number 3 behind Thriller and Purple Rain.
There you go.
Kurt Cobain said that this was one of his favorite albums he ever listened to. On Wikipedia, if you go down to like the legacy section of it, you know, on the right they'll have a little box where they have all the different the top magazines or the top whatever publications came out at the time with the rankings, and if it's 5 stars or 10 out of 10 or whatever it is, it kind of has it all kind of compiled there. Normally about 10 to 12 rankings. On this one, every single ranking is perfect. 100%. 5 out of 5 stars. 10 out of 10. Like,
yeah, there it is.
even on Sgt. Pepper's, there were ones that were less. This, A+. There was one that does freaking school letters. A+. Not even an A. A+.
I remember it was NME, the New Media Express, which was out of Europe, had rated it like album of the year, and then they put out a thing at the end of the 80s. And it was like the best album of the 80s.
Yeah.
Which was tough, you know, but part of me, I remember just that stuck with me as like, you know, it probably is. Like, and it was so groundbreaking that you didn't think really anything was really ever going to come around like it again.
Yeah, I can only imagine the time. Went platinum in the U.S., went silver in the United Kingdom. And so the thing is when they went into making this, they wanted to make it Marvin Gaye's album, What's Going On, which was very socially, very politically charged. They wanted it to be the rap version of that. They felt like they could make the greatest rap album of all time when it was done. I think Chuck D said that he felt like it could stand up with any rap album of all time. And even now in 2017, I'd agree with that. This one was meant to be faster than their debut album. They wanted to put a little more charge into it. Number one, it would make it better for performing, and they were doing a lot of that. Their live shows were a lot of the energy was coming from, and they felt they needed the second album to fit that. So they upped the speed. They wanted it to be a little bit quicker, a little bit faster. They also designed this for cassettes. Like we were talking about, CDs were just kind of becoming popular, but they were still on the up and up. So back in the day, cassettes, you had two sides. They decided to do 2 30-minute exactly sides because they didn't want to have any dead air. Back in the day, if you had an album that was less than an hour, on the second side, you would have dead air.
Yeah.
And they didn't want that. They wanted this album to be front, just from start to finish, they wanted to be on it. And they didn't want any dead air. And so, I mean, that's what I mean. There was so much intent and, like, purpose with this album. Like, they knew what they wanted to do, and it was more than an album. This was their missile. This was their vessel, right?
You know, that, and the other thing we talked earlier about CDs getting big, the cool thing about the CD versus the tape and LP before was not having to stop.
Right.
And to me, this was like, this was definitely the first rap album I heard that, that flowed like basically, you know, Dark Side of the Moon or something like that, where it was, there was no break. It
right.
Just, it goes straight through. And that was one of the cool things about, I didn't have, like I said, I had it on CD, but just, yeah, just playing it all
so,
the way
yeah.
through.
So yeah, I had the same experience because I listened to it on Spotify. So yeah, just all the way yeah. through. Well, so because they designed it for the two 30-minute sides, 16 tracks, 60 minutes, exactly.
That's awesome.
So this is another fun fact. The sides were supposed to be opposite. So originally, the song Show 'Em What You Got was supposed to open the album.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it was supposed to open the album, but at the last minute, one of the guys switched it. And instead, they opened with an introduction from, I think, Dave Pierce, who was like a British yeah. producer or something. Yeah. And he's just like introducing them at a live show.
Yeah.
And so they throw that in front instead. One of the cool things is, and this actually really, this is funny because I listened to this album probably 5 times before I started doing the background information on it. And I had my Good, Bad, and Boogie set up, right? Well, now this fact right here plays into that, and we'll get to it a little bit later. Side two, they call the black side. So if you listen, like I said, we'll get into it, but side two just has a little more grit and aggressiveness yeah. and just straight dirtiness, man. It is awesome. And side one's great, but side one's the kind of songs that you know. Side one is the Public Enemy songs you know that you've heard a lot that they could maybe play on the radio or some of those alternative radio stations could play.
It's not as hardcore.
Right. Yeah. Side two, the black side, yeah. is a little hardcore, and it is the jams, man. It's awesome. So, yeah, so they decided to flip them. Side two became called the black side. The production on this is just absolutely bananas. Like, beside Chuck D and Flava Flav just really doing an amazing job of, like, Jordan and Pippen, like, kind of playing off each other, with Chuck D just driving it home with an iron fist the entire album, the production by the Bomb Squad is so freaking cool, man. They do a good job of using, like, a lot of natural sounds, like crowds mm-hmm. and stuff like that,
yeah.
but also these really killer samples, like a lot of James Brown.
Yeah.
You get Parliament on there. They sample themselves. They sample yeah. songs that are yeah. on the record in other songs. Like, that is really neat. You know, like, yeah. why not, right? Why not? It was very, very cool. I know you like this. This album does a lot of, it really mixed rap and punk, like, really well.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. A lot of the comparisons, not only compared it to rap albums, but also compared it to, like, I think it was, like, the Sex Pistols.
Yeah.
A lot of those, like, really, like, punk bands from that era, because they kind of shared the same angst, really.
When I'll say hardcore rap, meaning just that, like, I listened to a lot of punk. I listened to a lot of, like, hardcore metal, and they just kind of went right along with that. And
yeah.
And then you had things like, you know, Anthrax covering
right.
Bring the Noise and
right.
then playing with them. So it did feed into that very urban.
They sampled Slayer.
Yeah, yeah.
They sampled Slayer.
I know. Before, and again, that was the other brilliant thing. Like, nobody knew Slayer back then unless you were really into metal.
They sampled Slayer.
But the beauty, that was also the beauty of being in the Def Jam family. Like,
sure.
These guys were all in New York City.
Yep.
I mean, can you imagine Rick Rubin, like, producing Slayer one day.
Very mixed
the
portfolio.
The Beastie Boys the next day.
Raging
and then
Slab.
Public Enemy.
Raging Slab.
And then Raging Slab. Yeah. I mean,
crazy. So yeah, just a very emotional album, just a driven album. It's a lot of fun, but I think Ice Cube said recently or a few years ago in an interview that you still, if you listen to this album today, it still kind of messes with your head a little bit.
Yeah.
And it does.
Makes you think.
It does. It makes you think and it makes you get a little angry. So yeah, still very relevant today, but really excited to get down into the Good, the Bad, and the Boogie, which is what we'll do next. So the next segment we're going to do is called The Good, the Bad, and the Boogie. As opposed to breaking down song for song, we give you guys and gals what we think is good, what we think may be bad, and whatever gives us that boogie. And we'll kind of explain what those mean specifically when we're back.
And we're back with segment three, the good, the bad, and the boogie.
The boogie. Yeah, one of our new segments.
It's So the good is, of course, what we really like. The bad's maybe what we didn't like.
Or it could be whatever.
It could be whatever.
You might have to twist the definition of bad, right? I think this is always subjective for every episode. Or it can be, right?
True.
We give ourselves...
Interpretive.
We give ourselves a template that is loose in nature.
Template.
We both work in marketing. Come on.
And then there's the boogie, which is, you know, something that just... It makes you just want to boogie.
Kind of makes you want to boogie, but the boogie doesn't necessarily make you want to dance. Sometimes it makes kind of makes you feel something. That's what the boogie is.
It's a feeling.
Makes you feel. Maybe makes you toe tap a little bit extra. Maybe makes your hips move a little bit more. Whatever that is, that feeling is the boogie.
The boogie. I'll start off the good, the bad, and the boogie with Paper Town. The good, I had like 4 songs I really was down on. The good.
Nice.
So the first one is, and I love the title of this, is A Day in the Life of a Railroad Spike.
Yeah, love this song. It's a good one to lead off, you're good with.
Growing up in Birmingham before I moved to North Carolina, I love the whole come from Alabama, just south of Birmingham. He's basically telling the story of this railroad, this piece of steel.
Yeah.
And, you know, it just kind of personifies it. All along, it's just great picking. I mean, it's fast.
Beautiful
song. It's fierce.
Song. Yeah.
It flows well. And then I also like how he names other song places like Cripple Creek and Red Rocks.
Yeah.
Which I think they're kind of playing with that a little bit. Like, you know, the Red Rocks could easily be red clay that we have throughout Appalachia, which is heavy in iron ore, which is why Birmingham and Pittsburgh and other places were big steel areas.
Sure.
Because the ore was there.
Yeah.
You know, otherwise we wouldn't have had that. I thought it was just an awesome song, jams out. So that was my first good.
I come from Alabama, just south of Birmingham, born in the back of a steel yard where they made me what I am. Dead of the night, blinding rain and bright sunlight. Tell my story the way you like. Another day in the life of a railroad spike.
Like, as far as, like, literature goes, like, that is, it's a cool imagery of the spike and everything, too,
you know? Like, you can just see the spike getting forged and pounded.
Right. And, but you could also,
you know,
like,
all this history going
change
by.
A couple words and you feel like you're talking about, like, an individual, like, a person or something. Yeah. It's just, man, it's a very cool song on a lot of different levels.
All right, so that was my first good. The second good I had was Row by Row. And I love this because it's like a salvation song, but it's not too preachy or anything.
Right.
And it was just...
Yeah, like what you said, there was like a gospel... There's a gospel the feel kind of threaded through the whole album. And it's definitely present in this song.
Yeah, it's like a salvation song, and it's just got the fantastic pace and the vocals. You know, it just kind of builds and builds onto it and then kind of break down a little bit. It's just cool. I really liked it. And it kind of breaks some of the... Again, it follows a very traditional bluegrass, but at the same time, it kind of breaks it away just a smidge, just a tad.
Yep.
That muddy water, row by row, I'll reach salvation's rock. Row by row, I'll finally meet the Father. Though my body may grow weary, I won't stop till I reach the other shore.
My third good is Paper Town. And so this is the title track, and as we said before, this is the song about where they grew up in Canton, North Carolina. And it's become like an anthem for this town. I saw some very interesting articles. They played a summer festival show up there this year, you know, and they said that everybody just lightened up when they played this and yeah. could identify with it.
That's awesome. It's like their town's anthem now.
Yeah, it is. And I mean, one of the things is like, how can you not like this song?
Yeah.
It really talks about community. It talks about this, it tells this kind of timeline story of the guy, founding the town and people coming in and then, you know, industrial, you know, revolution comes in and brings in, you know, the big factory, which is basically the bread and butter of this town for several generations.
Right.
And then, like I said earlier, you know, reading how the people, once the big conglomerate was going to close the plant, and then the community got together and said, no, let's keep our jobs, let's keep it going. And I think that's what was very interesting in both the lyrics of this song and the emotion of the song, as well as like reading some of the interviews with the band, was this is who we are, this is where we're from, we're still proud of it. It's got its ups and downs, but we're from Papertown, we're called proud to be from Papertown. And then I also thought it was interesting, like, they talked about, like, even cleaning the polluted river. There's a bit of, like, a social consciousness.
Sure.
In the song as well.
A lot of different elements.
"20 years for the depression. Theater Thompson staked his claim. In a little mountain town. Kenton was her name. Told everyone that was willing, steady work would be their reward. So they started making paper where the Pigeon River fords. But this ain't just another paper town on a random riverside. She was built with blood, sweat, and tears, and a whole lot of pride. From the mountains and the farmlands, around the smokestack she has grown. This ain't just another paper town, it's the one that I call home.
Yeah, the line I really like is, built with blood, sweat, and tears, and a whole lot of pride.
Nice. That could be like a tagline for Chevy or something.
Well, like, I'm just saying, you know, you and I work in marketing, we read stuff all day. Like, you couldn't write something that good.
Right. Papertown. Title track, right?
Title track. And so then my last good is The Other Side of the Mountain, which is actually the opening track.
Nice.
And kind of went back to this one. It's very traditional bluegrass on this. It's such a strong intro to their vocal harmonies and the instrumentation. It's a bit of a love song, like this guy wanting to take his girl to the other side of the mountain. And again, like, going back and listening to it again and again, I liked it more and more. I liked it the very first time I heard it, and it kicked off, like, and like you were saying, like, with bluegrass, it's like that certain time of year and certain mood that you get in.
Oh, yeah.
And you want it just to kind of, like, kick off and ride. And so it does a great job of doing that.
The side of a mountain where you can leave this life of worry far behind. Baby, won't you let me take you to the other side of a mountain? We'll settle down there and you can ease your troubled mind. Well, I've been calling on you every day for a year now, but you never want to give me a second glance. My affection for you is true and the time's long overdue for you to give our love an honest chance. Let me take you to the other side of the mountain where you can leave this life of worry far behind. Baby, won't you let me take you to the other side of the mountain? We'll settle down there and you can ease your troubled mind.
So that's the good.
The bad.
So I couldn't find anything, in my opinion, as bad about this. Like, there wasn't any really slow song or anything that I was kind of like, meh. They were all really good. And like you were saying, they stick to the traditional bluegrass format, but they kind of kick it up a notch. So what I thought that was interesting about The Bad, and this was based off one of the writer's reviews of this album, and first of all, he's got a great name, Dusty Wright.
Dusty Wright, that is a perfect name for a critic.
Yeah. So he wrote on the Huffington Post, and I thought this was just the greatest summation of what I've always felt is the bad of bluegrass, and that's Some people just don't like it.
Yeah.
And that's fine. So
they don't like that twang.
They don't like, they just don't get it.
They don't get it. Bless their hearts.
So that's kind of what he even says. He says, I'm not sure why bluegrass is so intimidating. You either drink from the cup of precision musicianship and joy, or you don't. And then he goes on to say it's best to see it live. And then he even references Jerry Garcia's Old and in the Way and stuff like that. And I think that's the same thing. Like, this kind of reminds me a bit of Old and in the Way.
Sure.
Like, it doesn't take on too much. It doesn't, like, try to be too one way or the other, gospel or country or bluegrass or anything. It's just, like, old-fashioned bluegrass done the right way with a bit of a contemporary feel and energy to it. I always find it funny when people, like, just kind of crap all over bluegrass, because I feel like saying, to me, if you're a fan of musicianship, it's one of the most enduring genres.
Oh yeah, precision is the right word.
Yes, very precision.
Very precision. Yeah.
Very very precise.
Very precision. Yeah.
All right, so now let's get down to the boogie.
The boogie.
So I got two boogies.
I know one.
The very first one is The One Way Out, the Elmore James, made famous by Greg Allman and the Allman Brothers.
Oh yeah. Way out, baby.
I wrote just two words here, enough said.
Yeah.
They come in, and I'll be honest with you. So the first time I listened to this, I just kind of listened to it at work, my headphones on.
Didn't know it was. You didn't know it was an Allman Brothers.
Yeah, wasn't really paying attention. And so then, like, when I went back and listened to it and looked at, like, the track names, I was like, oh, man.
Yeah.
So, like, I put that on first, and I was like, oh, wow. The other boogie I had is also a cover, and this is the last track, and it's Streamlined Cannonball. This was done by Roy Acuff. Roy, and I love Roy's middle name, Claxton.
Claxton, yeah.
Roy Claxton.
With Acuff. An X.
With an X. He was known as the king of country music, and I think what's important about Roy is that he really took the genre from being, you know, string band, hoedown format to more of the singer-based format.
Yeah.
And made country music what it is today.
Yeah, completely.
So I think what's interesting about this song is that they have a real fast-based approach to this classic. And it just kind of really makes you realize how good their songs are when they butt up to these other two great classic songs.
Yeah, that's a great way to put it.
Yeah, it just kind of holds its own. So again, my second boogie is Streamlined Cannonball. If you ever get a chance to compare just how much they've speeded it up, this, go Google some of the older versions, because this is a classic country
song. Roy Acuff's version is awesome, too. Like, it is a great song. It's a long steel rail and a short cross tie. I'm on my way back home. I'm on the train, the king of them all. That streamlined cannonball. She moves along like a cannonball, like a star in its heavenly flight. Lonesome sound of the whistle you love as she travels through the night. I can see the smile on the edge.
So that's the good and the bad and the boogie for Papertown.
Papertown, Balsam Rains. All right, so I'll take it now. I'll take that baton.
Take the mic.
If we were running a race, I would have taken the baton from you. So
show them what you got.
I'm gonna show them what I got. So Public Enemy, It Takes a Nation of Millions to Hold Us Back. Good, bad, and the boogie. So like I said in the last segment, the intro segment, I did not know that the second side was going to be not intentionally, maybe intentionally, like grittier, more aggressive, dirtier, whatever you want to put it. whenever I listened to the album like 5-6 times and came up with my Good, Bad, and the Boogie first, and then I did my background, and I saw that there was a distinct line in this album where side one is different from side two, right? What's funny is my Good and Boogie is essentially side one and side two.
Oh, there you go. There
so
you go.
My Good is the songs that are the Public Enemy brand that most people associate with the band, right? Like that it's not a ton of, like, the beats are great. The beats are awesome, but they're not really experimental. You don't have Slayer playing on one of them, right? Mm. Like, these songs are the ones where the beats are kind of simple. You've got the screech, you know, kind of sounds like a teapot every once in a while. You've got Chuck D just hammering those lyrics, and you've got Flava Flav is kind of sounding like a hype man who's just coming out there, just dropping in some cool lines. Flava Flav has some of the best lines in the album, and it's just like out of nowhere. It's like I just imagine Chuck D sitting there with a microphone just rapping, and all of a sudden Flava Flav, like Sting from the WWE, coming in from the rafters, like Flava Flav just drops down and just drops some knowledge on you, then hops out. Like, it is just it's wild hearing those two do it. But there is a Public Enemy sound, and that's my Good. So I got a couple songs we'll hit on. The first one is the second track, called Bring the Noise. Most people have heard of this song. This was the first single off the album,
yeah.
And one of the things I love. So I mentioned that they do sample a lot of the cool songs. James Brown or the JBs, yeah, get sampled a ton, specifically Funky Drummer. So
yeah,
I will try to mention whenever I pick one of these songs that Funky Drummer's on, because it's a few of them.
Once again, back is the incredible rhyme animal, the uncannibal
beast.
Public Enemy number one, 5-4 said
freeze,
and I got numb. Can I tell them that I really never had a gun? But it's the wax that the Terminator X-bun. Now they got me in a cell, cause my records they sell. Cause a brother like me said, well, Farrakhan's a prophet, and I think you wanna listen to what he can say to you. What you ought to do is follow for now. Power the people say, make a miracle,
deep.
Pump the lyrical. Black is back, all in, we're gonna win. Check it out.
Yeah, yo, come on.
Here we go again.
This was like their first, I think, big widespread hit.
And yeah, and
it was on a movie soundtrack, too. I think it was on Less Than Zero.
Oh, nice. Very cool. Spike Lee?
No, it was actually Robert Downey Jr.
Oh, I'm way off, yeah.
A couple other Brad Packers. It's actually a fantastic movie. It was a young writer that was big in L.A. at the time about a guy that goes away to the East and comes back. His best friend, Downey, is a total mess. And it was kind of a predicator, what happened to Downey after that.
Oh, wow. Interesting.
He came back.
So Movie Swap. We'll check that one out on the next episode of Movie Swap.
And Slayer's on the soundtrack
as well. And
Slayer's
on. Perfect. So, yeah. So Bring the Noise was like their first big hit, and you still hear that all the time. I love it. It's basically the first real track on the album. The intro is, it's a British record producer who is introducing them at a show in London. So this is the first real track, Bring the Noise. My second Good is track three. So right after that, Don't Believe the Hype. Don't Believe the Hype. Ew, man. I mean, this is another classic Public Enemy song, classic Public Enemy sound. It was another single from the album. The high-pitched screech on this is awesome.
Caught you looking for the same thing. It's a new thing. Check out this I bring. Uh-oh, the road below the level, cause I'm living low next to the base.
Come on!
Turn up the radio. They're claiming I'm a criminal. But now I wonder how. Some people never know. The enemy could be the Frank Guardian. I'm now a hooligan. I rock the party and clear all the madness. I'm not a racist priest to teach the
cause some they never had this.
Number one, never wanna run about the gun. I wasn't licensed to have one. The minute they see me, fear me. I'm the epitome of Public Enemy. Used, abused without clues.
Don't believe the hype, dude.
Don't believe the hype.
It's fantastic.
Yeah. So my next Good is the next track number four. This one is Cold Lampin' with Flavor.
I'm lamping, dude.
It is a cool song. So they actually sampled the Beastie Boys in this and Run DMC. Both get sampled in it. This obviously really lets Flavor Flav showcase himself a lot, and it's one of my favorite tracks because it is kind of a change after those first two punches to the face with really Chuck D driving it. You got Flavor Flav coming in, and he's not the only one obviously on it, but he does a killer job. Love him on the track.
Well, that was the thing about Flavor, was that he was this comic relief that could kind of lighten it up a little bit.
Yeah, so he was the hype man from the rafters.
Yeah, so it's like you didn't have overly heavy album, and then Flav comes in, and in fact on the third album he's got another one that's just like this called I Can't Do Nothing For You, Man.
Sure,
and it's just like this, like it's hysterical. It's got a little bit of a social message in it, but for the most part, it's Flav being Flav.
Flav being Flav. I'm lamping, dude. Lamping.
Cold lamping.
Cold lamping. All right. My next good is track number 7, so we'll hop down a little bit. Louder Than a Bomb. Again, yeah. Classic Public Enemy song. A lot of people have heard this song before. I guess Cold Lamping with Flavor's probably, it has kind of that classic Public Enemy sound, mm-hmm. but it doesn't necessarily have the same acknowledgement. Like most people don't know that song as much as they do Bring the Noise, Don't Believe the Hype, and Louder Than a Bomb. So Louder Than a Bomb, I really like the crowd noises. This is when I talked about how they kind of use a lot of some natural sounds mixing in with the samples that they use. This is one that they do that, and it's awesome. Also really, really, really love the intro to this track. And this is a track, another thing I mentioned earlier was that on this album, they actually sampled their own songs on the same album. So there's a track later on the album, it's actually track 14 called Rebel Without a Pause.
Yes.
And that song is actually sampled on Louder Than a Bomb. A really smart thing to do.
I like on this also where they're talking to each other on walkie-talkies.
Yeah.
To me, that was like the cool thing, like security of first world. It's like, oh yeah, they're giving them orders and all this stuff.
Right. That's awesome. Okay, yeah, Louder Than a Bomb. Untold, true but unknown, Professor Griff knows. Yo, I ain't no toast. And not to brag and I boast it, and plus it ain't no secret why the tap on my phone. And so I can't keep it a secret, so I decided to kick it, yo. And yes, it weighs a ton, I say it once again. I'm called the enemy, I'll never be a friend of those with closed minds and know that I'm rapid. The way that I rap it is making them tap it, yeah. Never serving a well, cause I'm an uncom. It's no secret at all. I've got one more track in my good. This one is actually the only track of my good that's on side two, the black side. This is track number 15, so it's one from the end. Prophets of Rage, which is now, I think, the name that Chuck D is working with under...
With the Rage Against the Machine.
So it's like Chuck D, I think one of the guys from Cypress Hill, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
And then Tom Morello, Brad.
Timmy and Brad, yeah. So I think they're playing this on tour now, too.
They definitely should be. So track 15, Prophets of Rage. So when I first heard this, there is a very obvious kind of funk riff.
Yeah.
That's on it, and I thought it was the Average White Band, which is a band that you hear a lot now. One of their songs was on the Superbad, the movie Superbad. It was always on that soundtrack.
Pick the Pieces.
Love that song. So I thought it was that. I was wrong. It's actually an Earth, Wind, and Fire song.
You're quite hostile. I got a right to be hostile, man. My people been persecuted.
before. We played the state, the points made you consider it done by the prophet of rage.
What the people say, yo, Griff, you and that's one
W. Prophets of Rage, again, classic, that Public Enemy sound, that Public Enemy, just a classic Public Enemy track, you know?
Yeah, and it's funny. Yeah, I never realized that was Earth, Wind, and Fire. I mean, now going back and listening to it, I'm like, oh my God, yeah, it's Shining Star is the beginning.
Yeah, Earth, Wind, and Fire, there you go. All right, so we'll hop down now. That finishes my good. We'll hop down to my bad. So like I said earlier, bad is can change. It is subjective, our definition of bad. My bad is it is bad that they don't get the respect that they deserve.
I agree with you there.
It is shocking to me that the younger generation, they don't know who Public Enemy is. But my issue isn't that they don't. Look, I get that like old bands can be forgotten. It's like old genres can be forgotten.
Yeah.
But this generation of rap is not forgotten. Kids know who N.W.A. is. Straight Outta Compton, a movie just came out about them. Those kids know who Run DMC is.
Yeah.
Those kids know who the Beastie Boys are. They know who some of these bands or some of these rap groups were from that era. But they don't know who maybe the greatest one of that era is. That's Bananas, dude.
Yeah.
Bananas. Yeah. And that, to me, is bad.
Well, and, you know, they were controversial in their day.
Absolutely. Well, hey, it's the same reason why some professional quarterbacks can't get jobs. If you're controversial, then it doesn't play everywhere, and therefore you can kind of get lost in the muck.
You know, the album after this with "Do the Right Thing," the movie, and the soundtrack on that, they actually play off a lot of that in those lyrics. I mean, they talk about how Hollywood still got racial stereotypes. They talk about, you know, 911's a joke is a track off that, which was very controversial. You know, with the polices, and it was also with Ice-T and Cop Killer and Body Count and all that stuff came out. They got lumped in with the real visceral message that, say, Ice-T and N.W.A. had. But yeah, I mean, they were already kind of preaching that whole message, but in a much more kind of intellectual, intelligent way from this entire street-driven genre that was totally breaking ground. And I think that was the other thing, is kind of at that place at that time, the sampling, the scratching, all those things that you don't really hear anymore unless somebody's kind of, I guess, doing like retro rap or something like that.
Sure.
You know, you didn't have auto-tune. You didn't have all this other stuff that was kind of like clouding up the music. So I think that's what's, you know, amazing. The social message, but just tied in with like just how they brought it all together.
Oh, yeah. It's a shame that they don't get the respect that they deserve. Hey, no, nobody gives me no respect.
Yes. Huh? I get no respect. I agree with you on the bad there. I think it is terrible they don't get the respect.
Yeah, it's a good bad. See what I did there? See what I did? Okay, so I'll hop down now to my boogie. So my boogie is, if my good is that classic Public Enemy sound, then my boogie is when they kind of take it, they kind of take a little bit of dirt, and they spit in it, and they throw it onto those classic Public Enemy songs, and that's what we get, the boogie. Because some of the side two is straight dirt, dirt, dirty, man. It is some cool stuff. All these tracks, like aside from the samples, are kind of stepped up a notch on the dirty meter. The names of these tracks are also like so cool. So we'll start down in there. The first one of my boogies is track number 8. So this is the only one of my boogie tracks that is on side one of the album. Track 8 is actually the last track on side one, and it is called Caught, Can I Get a Witness? And this track is about getting in trouble for sampling music. Mm-hmm. I thought that message is super cool. You can hear the song Son of Shaft. You can hear that guitar. Mm-hmm. You can hear the guitar in this, and that was immediately grabbed my ear. So love the name. Again, the samples are super cool, and I love the message of this is a song about getting busted for sampling music.
That's right.
Now in court, cause I stole a beat. This is a sampling sport, but I'm giving it a new name. What you hear is my PE. You know the time. Now what in the heaven does a jury know about hell if I took it? But they just look at me like, hey, I'm on a mission. Check it out, y'all. Conditions ain't right. Sitting like dynamite. Going to blow you up and it just might blow up the bench in. Judge the courtroom, plus I gotta mention, this court is dismissed when I grab the mic, yo, play.
What is this? What y'all think y'all doing bringing us to court for this guy and saying we stealing beats? Y'all can't copyright no beats, man. Y'all judges ain't crazy, man.
Get hyped. Come on, we gotcha. Gather around, gotcha. Mail from the courts in jail claims I stole the beats that I ran.
classic. I love that Shaft guitar.
It sounds, it's hard not to like it.
It's an iconic sound, yeah. Okay, so my next boogie is track number 9, right after track 8. So this, I like it because, I mean, it's the start of side 2. It's only like a little over a minute. It's a really short track, but it's just an incredible like intro for a side of an album. And when you think that they were making it as 2 30-minute pieces, this was supposed to like kick it off, right? And when you think about it like that, almost like after side 1 they took a set break and now we go to side 2 and this starts off the Black Side. This starts off that Dirty Dirt, man. It's just such a cool intro for a side. And another cool thing is that they sampled 2 of their songs from this album. They sampled Bring the Noise, track 2, and One of My Goods, and they also sample Louder Than a Bomb, track 7, and another One of My Goods. So track number 9, Show 'Em What You Got. Let's boogie.
Show 'Em What You Got.
Yeah, and see, I like that name too. Show 'Em What You Got. Yeah. Even that name's kind of classic Public Enemy, so that can maybe be in the good. But again, I love this. Just a real dirty start to the second side of the album.
And you got like Flay being less of a clown,
yeah,
and more aligning with Wolf Like Chuck
for sure. Hop Down. My next boogie is track number 10. So kind of that's another thing. There is not a bad track on this album, period. Not one single one. I mean, I couldn't find it. I mean, I didn't. There wasn't a single part of the album I was like, eh. Not even lukewarm. So, track number 10, my next boogie. it's called She Watched Channel Zero, and it's got a. Did you notice how I kind of raised my voice because it has an exclamation mark and a question mark?
Zero.
She watched Channel Zero. Yeah. So you gotta play the question mark and the exclamation mark.
She watched.
She watched. She watched. Yeah. This is the song where they sampled Slayer. So this song kind of sounds like a Beastie Boys song in that they use that. Like it is. Yeah. It's a. I mean, it's a Slayer guitar riff. This is also another song where they sample Funky Drummer by the JBs. It is, it's got that boogie.
The woman makes the men all pause, and if you got a woman, she might make you forget yours. There's a 5-letter word that describe her character, but her brain's being washed by an actor. And every real man that tries to approach, comes a cold thing, comes, it gets just like a rope. I don't think I can handle, she goes channel to channel, cold looking for that hero. She watched Channel Zero.
So I remember listening to this when it first came out.
She watched, she watched.
Yeah, I just bought like Rain and Blood, I don't know, not much earlier before, and was heavy into that. And then when you heard that, and with the radio or with the TV channels changing, and it goes right into Slayer.
Yeah.
It's just like, hell yeah.
Yeah, it's sick. It's really sick. A great one to listen to. Very aggressive. The guitar matches their aggressiveness. My next boogie, the next track. Track number 11. This was another one of the singles. The other single on the album is not, it doesn't fit into any of my categories, but it was Black Still in the House of Chaos was the other single. Track number 11, one of the singles called Night of the Living Bassheads. Again, Night of the Living Bassheads. Yes. Ridiculous name. I think David Bowie sampled in here.
Yeah.
And this song by the JBs called The Grunt. Dude, that song is so freaking cool, man. And this is another one that's sampled a few times throughout the album, but it is so tight.
And many of us, by the way we act, we even lost our minds.
Here it is, bam! And you say, God damn, this is a dope jam. But let's define the term called dope, and you're thinking me funky now. No, here is a true tale. Why the ones that deal, all the ones that fail, yeah. You can move if you wanna move. What it proves, it's here like the groove. The problem is this. We gotta fix it, check out the justice and how they run it. Selling, smelling, sniffing, riffing, and brothers trying to get swift in. Selling their own rubber home while some shrivel a bone like comatose walking around. Please don't confuse this with the sound. I'm talking about bass, 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 bass. Come on!
Bass, 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 bass
think the grunt, like that little bit of bum bum,
like Chuck coming in there. Yeah. Here it is, in your face.
It's crazy. Like a lot of these songs have that moment of that dun dun, like whether it's the screech or the horns from like the grunt. Well, that's the song that it's sampled from. Like it's present throughout the album. It's super cool. And that Dr. King at the beginning of it sets it up perfect. Like they do a good job of mixing in a lot of like activist speeches. Yeah. I know Malcolm X is in here too.
Yeah.
And it just really, again, sets the stage for the entire album. My next boogie track is track number 14. This is another single. This is the last single out of all the ones. We've mentioned them all now. This is the last one, and this is another really, really cool name, Rebel Without a Pause.
Yeah.
Rebel Without a Pause. Love it. The screech in this song sounds like a teapot. Like, it might even be a freaking teapot. I mean, I'm sure it's not, but it sounds just like a teapot. Love the breakdowns in this song. This song has a lot of cool breakdowns that you didn't get in most of the other tracks on the album. And this is another one where they sample Funky Drummer, and they also sample The Grunt. So both of the JB songs, Funky Drummer and The Grunt, are sampled on this one. Hey, yo, Chuck, man. I don't understand this, man. Yo, you got this money out, man. You're losing them. Radio suckers never play me. All the mix. They just okay me now. Knowing and growing. When the clock in my zone is no sneaking and taking everything that the brother owns. My calling card, recorded and ordered. Supporter of Chess and Mart. Loud and proud. Kicking live. Next poet supreme. Loop for truth. And my last boogie track is the final track on the album, Party for Your Right to Fight. And this is kind of a play on or play off of the Beastie Boys song,
Fight for Your Right to Party.
Yeah. It's, you know, conveniently sampled on this. The Beastie Boys song is sampled on this. You got a couple cool samples. Bob Marley sampled on this. This is one where they use Malcolm X speaking on it. It's super cool, and the intro to this song is really awesome too. So it's a perfect song. Again, as far as my boogie, like, it has the classic elements of Public Enemy, but it has an extra level of just dirtiness. And the name, Party for Your Right to Fight, come on, can't get any better than that. I'm boogied, man. I'm
boogied out.
Got my boogied on. All right, so that wraps up my good, bad, and boogie for Public Enemy. It takes a nation of millions to hold us back. We're going to be right back with this next segment, which is where we're going to ask each other a question based off of the album that we were given. Check out the full albums for each episode at albumswap.net.
And now, time for questions.
Questions. It's segment 4 where we ask each other a question.
Based off
the album.
The album.
There you go.
That we swapped.
Yeah. Nice assist.
Excellent.
There you go.
All right, so I'll go first.
Yeah, you go ahead.
I got a humdinger of a question.
Humdinger.
Humdinger.
We're in that country feel here since we're talking about bluegrass, so might as well ask me a humdinger.
Yeah, so Paper Town is the name of the album.
Paper Town.
So if you were to write an album about your hometown or the town you live in now, what would you call it? Like if you had to give it a different name than just calling it, say, Raleigh or...
Okay. That's a good one. So I'm from Smithfield.
Or that's going to say, it could be Smithfield.
From Smithfield, live in Raleigh. If I was going to write a song, it would definitely be about my hometown. You know what I would call it? If I was writing a song, and it's probably because I'm in like this bluegrass mindset right now, right? So when I'm thinking country and bluegrass, stuff like that, I'm thinking back home, country feels, probably drinking a little bit of something, make, you know, makes the hair stand up a little bit. Yeah, something like that. But there is a favorite watering hole in my hometown of Smithfield, North Carolina, called the Little Brown Jug. So if I was naming a song or an album after my hometown of Smithfield, I'd call that song Little Brown Jug.
Little Brown Jug.
Oh, yeah.
I like that.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And I'm not sure what the contents of that song would be, but it would be about a little brown jug. Yeah, so if you're ever in Smithfield, North Carolina, hop in there. Little Brown Jug. It's the greatest watering hole in Johnston County. It's got the coldest beer in Smithfield. And if the owner's in there, he's a tall man named Andrew. That guy is the man. Tell him Fred D said he said hey and that he sent you, and he'll probably maybe give you a beer, at least a high five at the very
worst. Would you say Fred D sent you or Fred D's Jr.?
Yeah, say Fred D's Jr.
Because, you know, that's two different Fred D's.
You're right. I got to remember about the branding. It's my own personal
Well,
thing.
And then your dad. He'd be
yeah,
like,
true.
Who are you sending into this bar saying right. that they know me? I don't know who
that's
they
true.
Are.
So, yeah, say Fred D's Jr. sent
Junior!
You.
Jr.!
Ask for Andrew and say Fred sent you. So, yeah, I'd call my song the Little Brown Jug.
Little Brown Jug.
Little Brown Jug.
I like that.
Okay, so my turn. So my question... So Public Enemy, I think a lot of people, when they think initially about Public Enemy, like what comprised Public Enemy, like who's in it?
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of people think Chuck D did the lyrics, Flava Flav was the hype man, and then somebody mm-hmm. probably did the music, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's not really the case. Like we mentioned, Public Enemy, Chuck D, main lyrics, main vocalist, not the only vocalist, Flava Flav, that hype man that also had a lot of substance to him too. Yeah, Terminator X doing it spinning the tables. You had the Bomb Squad doing the production, mm-hmm. and then you had the S1W, mm-hmm. right, as kind of that on-stage presence.
Griff.
And you had Professor Griff, exactly, sorry. You had Professor Griff, who is the Minister of Information. So, mm-hmm. like, clear roles defined yes. out that make up this kind of a family, or more, mm-hmm. More of like an organization, I'd say.
A unit.
Yeah, ooh. I like that. This is a unit. That's,
you're a unit.
Man, that's tight. So, yeah, so they make up this unit that we'll call Public Enemy. My question to you is, I want to drop you into, you're now a pivot. You get to choose which role you want to play
no.
in Public. I don't mean like you want to be Chuck D. I'm saying where would you like to apply yourself if you were invited by the members of Public Enemy to join one of those kind of factions within the unit?
Oh, wow.
Are you a vocalist? We coming up with lyrics? Are we a hype man? You know what? I can see Brian beside a Flava Flav with a clock around his neck going, B. McD.
Yeah. I'd say a little bit Flava Flav and a little bit Professor Griff.
Okay.
Okay. I'd say probably more Griff now. And more Flava Flav when I was younger. That is
awesome. You know what? The only thing Flava Flav was missing was B. McD. You would have been the yin to his yang.
Well, right? I had a rap name in those days.
Oh, please tell everybody what it is.
It was called Slack D.
Slack D and Flava Flav.
Yeah.
Dude, that is the only thing. So Public Enemy, though they got perfect grace from a lot of people, they were 99 out of 100 because they were lacking Slack D besides
Flava
Flav.
Well, I don't know about that. I would have been honored if they would have called me up on stage there.
Yeah,
but I probably would have looked fairly out of place.
Maybe.
Maybe.
Maybe you were just what they were missing, man, you know?
I don't know,
oh.
but yeah, that'd be awesome.
So okay,
Slack
very
D,
cool.
New member of Public Enemy.
Slack, there you go. Slack D is the newest member. We're going to change the Wikipedia page after this because we work on the internet. We know how to do that. So yeah, so we are going to add you to the Wikipedia page. Slack D, newest member of Public Enemy. That wraps up segment 4. Questions. We're going to be right back with the last segment where we give you guys scores and just a real quick review.
And we're back for our final segment.
Segment 5.
Ratings.
Ratings and review.
Ratings and review.
Yeah. Yeah, well, go ahead and lead this off, man.
Do you want me to lead off? I'm a lead-off hitter tonight.
There you go.
Paper Town
by Balsam Range.
Balsam Range.
Love saying that.
It does. It is a lot of fun to say. Balsam Range.
Balsam Range.
Yeah. A lot of fun.
Paper Town, Balsam Range. I gave it 8.7. I loved it. Great pace. has the traditional bluegrass. The instrumentation is fantastic. Melodies and harmonies are great. Doing One Way Out and the other cover, just awesome. Yeah.
It is a killer, killer, killer album.
Great album.
Strongly encourage everybody to listen to that one. I had Public Enemy. The album was called It Takes a Nation of Millions to Hold Us Back. I gave this a score, as a strong score. And then the thing is, now this is episode 14, I kind of had to think back to some of these other albums that would be maybe in the same category as this one, right? I felt like comparing the night, not comparing the albums head to head, but comparing how I enjoy them personally, compared to Beastie Boys' Paul's Boutique, I think that if I'm being objective, Public Enemy, Takes a Nation of Millions to Hold Us Back is better than that album. Like complete album, I think it's better if I'm being objective, but I'm not. I'm being subjective, and I gave Paul's Boutique a 9.3. So I'm giving Nation of Millions, Public Enemy, I'm giving it a 9.2. Dude. Now I'm giving it a 9.2. If I'm being objective and removing my personal, you know, likenesses and dislikes and whatever, bias and the fact that I gave another album a score already, if I'm removing that out, this album is what every other outlet says and what Wikipedia says. It's a 10. It is at least a 9.9 objectively, because if we're just talking music and stuff, yeah, it's a low nines. It is that good by itself when it just comes to like music, just the music. But when you think about the message and you think about the relentless message in every single track, and the fact that they were using this album and this opportunity that they had to progress a message and to try to progress an entire race of people, that is heavy lifting, and they took it on and they absolutely crushed it. Because of that, because of like the cultural significance of this album, it is a freaking 10. It should be listened to by every single person in America, not maybe the world. Like, these issues that they rapped about in 1988 and they were that passionate and pissed off about are still very present in today's world. Yeah. And they're still dealing with it. Probably the reason why Chuck D is in a band called Prophets of Rage, with Rage Against the Machine.
He should be like the minister of rage for the whole country.
He is the minister. Ooh, I like that. He is the minister of rage. So my score is 9.2 for Public Enemy's second studio album, It Takes a Nation of Millions to Hold Us Back. Incredible record. One of the better ones I've ever listened to. I will, like I said when I listened to Paul's Boutique, this is a record that I know that I'll listen to for the rest of my life. It's that kind of record. It'll be one that every once in a while I'll just be like, oh man, I need to listen to that Public Enemy record and just throw it on.
I got a right to be hostile.
Yeah. Love it.
You'll be quoting those lines out.
Exactly. That's the thing. Like, I'll be doing that probably for the rest of the night, just like quoting these random lines. Yeah, man. Party for your right to fight. So that wraps it up. That was Scores and Reviews, Segment 5, Episode 14 of Album Swap. I think we can put a bow on it.
That's right. So we're going to wrap it up, and we'll come back in the next episode with two more albums to swap.
Yeah, that'll be episode 15. So let's wrap it up, put a bow on it, and I go with Merry Christmas, I guess.
You have been listening to Album Swap. Visit albumswap.net for all the latest episodes.